It's a half a cup. Half a cup. It's the news, according to me. Good morning. It is Monday morning, April 1st. It's not an April Fool's show. This really is a show. It's 7:28 a.m. Monday morning, April 1st. First day of the month. Fourth month of the year. 2024. And I am here, your host, with half a cup. I only have half a cup this morning. I'm almost out of chai. Apparently, the person who's in charge of ordering the chai, I don't know, it didn't come in, so I'm not sure if there was a supply chain issue, apparently. I think I failed to let my wife know that I needed more chai. So I had a little bit left in my can, and I went to look for more, and there was no more. There was no more, so I cried for about an hour. And then I made myself a half a cup of chai, because that's about all. And then I've got a backup cup, so that's the good news this morning is that I have a backup cup. But my backup cup is it's not sweet tea. I wish it was. I should have made some sweet tea this last week, but. I'm going to be gone. I've realized I'm going to be gone for almost a whole week here. I'm going to be leaving today, going to Newark today. I'll be in Newark tomorrow morning for the show. And then Wednesday morning, I will be in Cleveland Thursday morning, I will be in Springfield, Illinois. And then I don't think there's going to be a show on Friday. I don't know how I'm going to have a show on Friday. It's possible. Not probable. It's possible I could get a show in on Friday. If I do, it might be live. If I don't do it live, I just don't know how I'm going to get it done. It's going to be a little bit tricky. I'm going to be at a conference over the rest of the weekend. I'll be in a hotel there with my wife, which doing the show with my wife in the room is just not the same. It's just not going to sound the same. Let's just say I'm not really free to be me. She'll be in the background making all kinds of comments about how silly my statements are. And so I'm pretty sure I will not be able to have a show on Friday. But if I do, it'll be, it's about a 10% chance. So in my backup cup, I have Celsius water. It's peach vibe. It's got a peach vibe to it. If you've ever been around a peach, you know what kind of vibe they put off. That's what it is. It's a peach vibe. But I do have a half a cup of chai here with, by the way, Almond Joy creamer in it. I don't know why my voice is kind of raspy low this morning. I'm not sure why. I'm not sure why I've got such a low voice this morning. Well, I kind of have some idea. Yesterday morning, of course, it was Easter over the weekend, or Resurrection Day, as I prefer to call it. This cute little kitten, not really a kitten anymore. It's a cat. She's just so sweet. She wants my attention all the time. This was a stray cat. Feral. We adopted this cat, and now this cat just loves us and wants attention all the time now. So it's kind of fun to see a cat go from being extremely scared of people to just wanting attention all the time from people. It's been kind of fun. So, where was I? I was distracted by a cat. Oh, chai. I just better take another sip of chai here. So, my voice, raspy voice. Yesterday, I was asked to help lead worship at a church. That was I appreciate the church. It's got the guy who's the pastor there now is the grandson of a very famous pastor in the country. Who has since gone to see the Lord, but he's really maturing as he's probably 10 years younger than me, maybe, I don't know. something like that. Maybe not quite that, not much. I think he's in his 50s, maybe 40s, 50s. He's still got young kids. I'm not sure how old he is, actually. It's not really relevant. He's got to be in his 40s. And he, but he's really maturing as a preacher. And I really appreciate the fact that he, just everything is, revolves around, he's constantly pulling out scripture. He'll have 12, 13, 14, 15 scriptures in his lesson. And then he's got, in his message. And then he's got, on top of that, he has just stuff he'll pull out just by memory. He'll just, relate other scriptures. And it's just, he just flows really well now. And it's really cool to see him, how he's matured. But his wife leads worship. And they asked me to come and help them, because so many people were gone from, actually, it's kind of interesting. Most churches are full on Easter Sunday, and this particular church, everybody goes to see their parents, which they don't, pretty much everybody's parents live somewhere, their family lives somewhere else. So the church actually is emptier than it normally is on Easter. Any other Sunday, which is kind of weird, but it was, that's kind of the dynamics of this whole thing. So there's a lot of families that weren't there. So a lot of the musicians weren't there. So they had me come in and I play guitar and try to sing. So I was singing my heart out yesterday and we did, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 songs. And I'm pretty sure that's why my voice is the way it is today. It's a long story, a long way to get around the whole thing to where I'm actually saying something, but it's been it was a good weekend. Now there's an interesting concept. Mark Dice, he's been kind of commenting on things about religion and Christianity and Judaism, and this is a common. What he's talking about, what he's trying to explain, and the way he explains things about Christianity and the Jews, is a very common Western theology ideology perspective. And with all respect, I think he's wrong. And I think he's wrong. I think he's right about what he thinks he's right about. But it's this ideology, this thought process is incorrect. It is a Western centered idea that I think is askew. The idea, I was raised with this. I just never thought much about it, really. And the circles I grew up in and the churches I grew up in, they never really talked about this much. But it is talked about in some denominations. It's talked about quite a bit. In fact, the Roman Catholics. Now, for my Roman Catholic friends out there, I'm sorry. I have issues. I have issues with almost every denomination. So just don't think that I'm just picking on. Most denominations, let me just be clear about something, what my perspective is on this. Most denominations that I'm aware of, that I've been involved in, and I've been involved in a lot of them, are typically they have something messed up in their ideas, in their theology. There's things I disagree with, and it's things that I believe aren't biblical. There are some churches that do an awesome job of staying now, but there are, and within denominations, there are churches that do better job than others. I mean, I grew up Mennonite. I was actually, when I got serious about serving God, I was probably 17, and I really didn't get real serious until about 21. But I became a youth pastor, licensed lay minister in the Church of the Brethren. And it is also an Anabaptist church, just because I had family connections and everything there as well. So, but it was in the process of doing that. Now, I went to a Bible college that was a missionary college. It was a missionary denomination, the missionary church, was primarily the backbone of that particular college. Now, it wasn't, they didn't put themselves out there as that. It was just considered a Bible college, but it was its main support came from the missionary church. Soon after that, Taylor University down in Indiana here, in Marion, Indiana, or near Marion, Indiana. It's in Upland. They actually ended up buying the college that I went to a couple years after I left. And I only went there for 1 year. I went with it was a major youth ministry study thing. I took some classes and courses, didn't get a degree. I kind of got like a Bible certificate. It wasn't even that. That's what they used to call it. They didn't have it. They didn't even offer it when I went, but it was the same, kind of basically went through the same course. And I never really thought that much about the Judaic roots and some of the things that Jesus said until I started really getting involved with a group that kind of had a different perspective on this whole thing. And now so many more things make sense. And then I heard this guy, I was actually on a sailing trip one night, and this guy brought this up. He made some very interesting statements throughout the course, and I learned a lot from this guy. But one of the things he said was, Jesus was born a Jew, was raised a Jew, fulfilled all the Jewish traditions, taught as a Jew. In fact, 99% of his theology would have been that of a Pharisee. He didn't act like the Pharisees. He wasn't a part of the religious in crowd. But his theology was there. When he rebuked them, he usually rebuked them about their twisting of the theology. And he was crucified as a Jew, raised as a Jew within the prophetic Jewish faith writings and scriptures. He himself said he did not come to abolish the law and the prophets, but to fulfill them, which is key here. And somehow the Western church thinks he's going to come back as a man with a pointy hat who looks like the Pope, I guess. I don't understand this. Now, if you dive into Roman Catholic theology and their ideals about the Pope, saints, the Virgin Mary, it starts getting really strange. And I the things that are said, believed, canonized within the Roman Catholic Church, I think some questions need to be asked about some of this stuff. Because frankly, it's Well, how dare you question? I am daring to question because I think it needs to be questioned. We need to search the scriptures and see if these things are true. And if we don't do that, I think we're doing all of humanity a misservice. So where I'm at with this is the Western church changed so many things. I believe we are to, and one of the things that it's very clear, scripture is very clear about is that the Gentiles are engrafted in to the branch. The branch is still, I don't believe that God divorced Israel. And by saying Israel, I mean Jacob. His descendants, I don't believe he divorced them at all. And there are people who will say that. They will say, well, the Jews are no longer God's chosen people. Now it's the Christians that are God's chosen people. Yes and no. We've been engrafted into the branch. And the branch is still children of Abraham. And this is where I think we have to be very careful. Now, there's a difference between the state of Israel, and I've said this before, there's a difference between the state of Israel and the people, the Jewish people. And you have to realize that there are evil Jews and there are evil Christians. The faith itself is not evil. It's the twisting of the faith that becomes evil. So it's a rabbit hole I'm not going to go down this morning, but there is an awful lot of anti-Semitic undercurrent. And now you realize most of the Reformed churches, Luther and all the others that have brought about Reformation in the church, restoration and Reformation, is Reformed or repurposed Roman Catholicism. Most of Western theology, most of Western denominations are Reformed Catholicism, not fulfilled Judaism, which I think is what we should be about. I think we should be about the fulfilling of Judaism. That's what Jesus did. And we're called to be his children. We're called to be his followers, his disciples. And we should be fulfilling Judaism just as he did. Now, or at least we should walk in that shadow. Not that we... He completed the law. Okay, he did all that for us. We can't do that. We still, by his mercy, were saved by grace. It was his grace that reached down with mercy and covered us with his blood. And in doing so, he fulfilled everything in the law. We no longer can add anything to what he did on the cross. We can't, in our own righteousness and our own goodness. Well, he was a good person. He's going to go to heaven. Oh, is that how it works? No, it's not how it works. I'll tell you why he's going to heaven. It's not because he was a good person. It's because there was a good person who was crucified for him. Because he wasn't a good person. He may have responded in good ways to what that person did on the cross, what Messiah did on the cross. That's why he's going to go to heaven. I am probably just rambling on this morning, sipping my half cup of chai, grumbling and complaining, spewing out the gospel. Anyway, this is the crux of our faith. I believe it's the point where we really need to be understanding of what it is that we're called to be as a body of believers. And, our very Savior, the one who we believe to be our Messiah, the one whose words meant more to us than anything else, told us quite clearly to love God with all your heart and to love your neighbor as yourself. How will they know that you're my disciples? That we love each other. That we have love for one another. And it's not just an emotional ooey-gooey, oh, I love you with little lollipops and roses. No, it's not that. That's not the kind of love he's talking about. Caring for each other and actually, to the point where it hurts. There's a cost. A price to pay. So, having said all that, I want to move on to some other things about politics. And a statement that was made, apparently, I can't find much about this. This is being scrubbed on the internet, by the way, but it's not being put out there very much. But apparently, Joe Biden decided there's going to be Trans Visibility Day or whatever it's going to be, LGBT, whatever it's going to be. He had some kind of Easter shouldn't be called Easter. It should be called something else. Trans, something about LGBTQ trans something day. And of course, Donald Trump stepped in with a, I think, appropriate response to that. He said, you need to apologize to the nation for what you just said. It was abhorrent. I had so many texts about this. People texted me all over the place. People I haven't heard from in years, sending me the article about what he'd said. And they are appalled. People are appalled by this, sickened by this. By just the way he wants to twist this around. I don't believe Joe Biden came up with this idea. Somebody told him, no, you should come out with this. Joe Biden's Catholic. Nancy Pelosi's Catholic. Catholic Church is vehemently, at least it used to be, against abortion, and yet she staunchly defends it and promotes it. Calls it reproductive rights. It's not reproduction at all. It's anyway, we have and this whole thing kind of stems from this whole thing that's going on between Ben Shapiro and Candace Owens. And it's that, as I suspected, this is backfiring big time on the Daily Wire, especially on Ben Shapiro. I think it's very difficult for them to navigate this because they are in the wrong. They're flatly in the wrong, and this brought up a whole big issue, a big can of worms that's bigger than just Candace Owens. But and again, this goes back to Ben Shapiro being more or less more than less. The establishment Republican quasi conservative in name only kind of person that he is. Rules for thee, not for me. I don't know. That's where we're going with that. So to move along, what's happening here with this week. Now this, as we know, the boat, the dolly that crashed into the bridge, more questions have been raised. There are still things that are very suspicious about this whole thing. I've listened to a lot of talks from harbor masters, from people who are kind of in the know. And to listen to them, it makes more sense understanding-wise as far as, okay, we can see how this kind of thing might have happened. And it definitely could have been an accident, just a straight-out accident. The question comes back further than this, though. There's this issue of how this thing was designed. There are no bumpers. I've been on a lot of rivers with my boat. Rivers where there are smaller bridges, much smaller than this thing is. And even on those small bridges, there are, what do they call them? Is it stanchions? What do they call them? They're not really stanchions. They're like a bulwark type thing. It's not a bulwark. The bulwark is a different definition of something that's on a boat. There are pilasters, pylons, that kind of thing, that are put into the, right before the posts, right before the main supports for these bridges. They're usually put in them or around them that will deflect or absorb the crunch from a large boat to keep, you know, to keep the bridge itself from being damaged. The power lines that were going across the river there had those kinds of things around it. But the bridge didn't. Very strange the way it was designed. My big question was, why was there no tugs helping this ship in and out of the harbor? I don't understand what. I guess some harbors don't require it, and some of them, you know, once the boat is under its own power and it's on its way, the tugs let it go. And of course, that was a big mistake in this particular situation. There's the issue of they tried to drop the anchors and they tried to do all kinds of other things. Well, anchors have to have scope in order for them to be held down. And of course, there was the high winds we were having at that time. You don't know for sure what's going to happen with your anchors at that point because of the, you know, where's that going to put you? I've been in situations. I have a sailboat. I have a mast. The mast is about 50 feet tall. I've been in situations where I went through a bridge going up the current, upriver. The bridge came down behind me. And of course, my first thought is, if I lose my engine right here, they're not going to get that bridge back up. This thing's going under the bridge. And we are going, the boat's going to go under the bridge. The mast is going to have to follow along behind us, and we're going to tip over pretty, you know, quite a bit. Either that or the mast is going to break, one of the two. Either way, it's going to be catastrophic, and it could be, you know, very dangerous and injurious to many people. Because it would happen so fast. By the time I get an anchor out there and get some scope on it so that I can get some actual grip on the bottom, if I can get some grip on the bottom, we're going to be up against the bridge. It is going to be a mess. And it's just, so you get yourself into these situations where there's no way out. Now, I always try to have, this is something I learned in flying. I always tried to have a way out. Okay, what's going to be my way out? If we get into this, we're going to try to make it to this airport over there. The weather is doing this. What is our way out? Which direction do we head if we run into trouble and all we have left is a compass? We'll tell you, have a total electrical failure. We just hit this heading on the compass and we fly for, you know, 45 minutes and we know we're going to be out of the weather, whatever it's going to be. So you always have this kind of thinking in the back of your mind, this is our way out, or this is another way out, this is an alternative, this is our backup for this plan. Always, you always have that in your head. There are times in a boat that I found myself in situations where there's no out here. I mean, the best I could possibly do is maybe crash it into the side of the shore to keep it from going into the bridge. But that's, you know, granted that I have power to do that. I mean, there's that 30 seconds to a minute there where if you lost power in that moment, maybe even longer than that if you're not responsive very quickly. But if it's there's that little bit of time there where you got no choices. You're in that coffin corner, they call it. Boy, the examples, the illustrations I could use on life itself. It's in that part of things. I'm going to take a look here at some things. Why did that do that? That's kind of odd. It's almost like I don't have internet service here this morning, but I do. I'm going to take a look at some of the headlines in my feed here this morning as we look at things. A lot of misinformation and disinformation out there. Now, apparently there's this video now that's circulating of Israel having bombed a tent at a hospital where these journalists were staying. Because I guess these tents are set up around some of these hospitals for journalists to be in, to operate out of. I suppose this one tent was blown up by an airstrike from Israel. And of course, my first reaction, and of course, the comments, the first couple comments that rolled in that I saw right away were, why would Israel do this? Why would they do this? Oh, this is so disgusting. Why would they do this? Well, that is a question. Why would they do that? And this just takes me right back to, oh yeah, remember when Israel bombed that hospital and killed exactly 500 people? All of a sudden, 500 people were dead from hospital bombing. It turned out to be a parking lot where nobody was killed, and it was shot. It was an explosion from a missile that was shot from within Gaza. It was a spin-off Hamas organization. And yet for 2 weeks we were led, I still kept hearing people talk about it for 2 weeks. Reporters, supposedly credible reporters, were still talking about this bombing of a hospital that killed 500 people. See, we're dealing with individuals here who are just pure evil. And we keep hearing this being called a genocide. If it were a genocide, if Israel wanted to destroy everybody in Gaza, they would just kill them all. The way Hitler killed everybody that he didn't like. That was a genocide. He wanted to kill the Jews, period. That was his purpose. He wanted them eradicated. Call them vermin and rats. That's just because you call a person a vermin doesn't mean you're a Nazi. Doesn't mean you're Hitler. There are people on this earth who are despicable. They do heinous things. Calling them a vermin would, you know, it's not necessarily. I mean, I still think a person is a human being is still a human being. But these people do things that they're monsters, they're animals. They would have you believe that Donald Trump is one of these people. That he's this monster. They've played him up in their head so much that they can't even, just to be around the guy, their skin just wants to crawl because he's just so evil. And yet you ask them, what is it that he's done that's so evil? What has he done to you? What is it he has done that is so evil? John Stewart has been putting his foot in his mouth. John Stewart, by the way, he has a show. He's back on the show again because just for the election season, because they see him as the master of political spin. He went out. I should play the little audio of him. He gets on these little show and he starts talking about how Donald Trump overestimated the value of his properties so that he could get a loan. But then at the same time, he devalued his properties for the purposes of paying taxes. And then he says, this is called lying. Well, this isn't a tax case. The IRS isn't the one after him here. It is an attorney general in New York who says he defrauded the banks. The banks don't see it that way. They testified totally the opposite way. They're willing to do business with him again. They had a perfectly fine relationship with him. They loaned him the money based on what they came to a negotiation. They negotiated and they came to an agreement. This is what the property is worth. We will loan you the money based on this as your collateral, and we'll take that. They settled on that. And then the state steps in and says, no, it's not worth that much. But now they're going to go to... Now, see, here's the problem. Who was defrauded? Who was injured here? Okay, well, he didn't pay, so he's not paying enough on his taxes. Okay, taxes in Florida are 0.99%. Just under 1% for property taxes. So if he paid $1 million for his property tax, or whatever he paid, and the property was actually worth $400 million instead of $100 million, or whatever they're going to call it, or $18 million, or whatever they're going to call it, then he should pay the difference in the tax, if that's where you're saying he's... So maybe a couple million dollars, if we're going to make this fair. Make it a tax case. But this idea that you're going to fine him for the value of the property, the entire value. They're saying it's only worth $18 million or $15 million, or whatever they're saying. Okay, and you're fining him $400 million because he borrowed $400 million for this, but he paid it all back. And now you're going to fine him that much money, $500 million, basically. And you're going to take his properties that supposedly only worth $15 million. And you're going to sell them for at least, and CNN is on there saying, well, you know, it's hard to tell what the properties would if she comes, they're all for her coming in and taking those properties, by the way. They want to see Mar-a-Lago gone. They want to see that in the hands of Letitia. And they want to see it sold to the lowest bidder. And the professionals that are on there now are saying, well, it would probably fire sale for about $250 million. In other words, about half what it's worth, $500 million. Typically, when you fire sale something like that, when you really want to dump something right away on the market. Because, see, the state of New York can't handle owning, managing the property. If they seize the properties, first of all of a sudden, Donald Trump's not going to pay property tax on that property anymore. Because the state has repossessed it. Who's going to pay the property taxes now? That's a lot of money coming in. They turn around and sell it. Yeah, it's just asinine. This whole thing is just pathetic and stupid. These people are motivated with nothing but rage. The root of bitterness that has snuck in and gotten a hold of them. They make stupid decisions. But that's what they're doing. Oh, Transgender Day of Visibility. That's what he called it. That's just here in front of me. Transgender Day of Visibility. Yeah. So, it's been very... very interesting. But unfortunately, the Babylon Bee, I don't know if you've ever read anything about the Babylon Bee. Babylon Bee is basically a Christian perspective. It's satire. They have a lot of things that are in the news, and they usually make some kind of crazy statement about something. Just to give you an idea. Oh, let me, I probably have some things here. I've got so many things on my desktop right now. I probably got something here from Babylon Bee. Oh, where is it at? It's got to be something here in my feed. They call it a feed here in the business. What's that? Here we go. Where is it all at? I don't see anything here. Well, I wonder if it's in my other... my other account. Would it be on my other account? I don't see. Yeah, there's nothing there. Oh. Well, that's interesting. Well, must be a different email account. I have, that's satire. If you just look it up, just type in Babylon Bee. Go to their website. It's all satire. They'll say they don't, Christian... one of the things they had on the other day was something about Phil Wickham. It was pretty funny. I'll just pull it up here. Let's just pull up Babylon Bee. See if I can pull it up. Babylon Bee. There it is. Here we go. Let's just take a look here. The fake news you can trust. That's, Pontius Pilate sure glad that whole Jesus ordeal is done with. Let's see here. We got Democrats issue national Fetterman recall. financial advisor reminds new parents it's never too early to start saving up money for Legos. Aides wake Biden to play that fun president game again. Absolute psychopath lets microwave count down all the way to zero. In bonding moment, father teaches son how to call handyman to fix faucet. Dad lands dream job at brewery coming up with puns for naming beers. At Manhattan Fundraiser, the boys reminisce about all the good times they had together on that other island. Ooh. 10 changes. Let's see what they're going to get. Trump finds a link between happiness. I'm sorry. Study finds link between happiness and not knowing what's going on with Steven Crowder. Apparently, there's more going on there. It's probably something in the backstory again on Steven Crowder. That's their Pete Buttigieg praises cargo ship for helping dismantle racism in America and American roads. DeSantis kicked out of Republican Party for accomplishing too many things in last-ditch effort to attempt to save job. Ronald McDaniel gets lesbian haircut. She gets this really short haircut. It's, I don't know. Funny stuff. Anyway, liberal parents ground kid from new pronouns for a month. Tyrus hates Planet Fitness and threatens to punch Piers Morgan. Anyway, that's the kind of stuff you get on the Babylon Bee. Right there, there you go. Now, on to some more serious things. We have the cases against Trump apparently are now again wavering again. There's a lot of things happening. They're kind of falling apart. They're trying to say that they're going on and they're going to continue on. Of course, he had the major thing was that they slashed the bail money or the bond money for Trump in the case of the Letitia James case. But you also have the big Fannie down in Georgia, that whole issue. 9,000 ballots were found in a recent election in Illinois that just heard about yesterday. I think it was yesterday from Facts Matter, Roman Bumblecoff. He had this thing about, apparently, there was a very close election of some kind of, like a special election that happened recently just in the last couple of weeks. And it was, apparently there was 9,000 ballots found in a cage somewhere that was locked in there. Of course, I wonder, you know, we're going to soon find out about all that. They all find out that they were particular one side or the other probably, or that it changed the result of the election. Oh, things like that. And then we have, you know, there's other issues with regard to things that are happening in Ukraine. Russia, of course, was bombed. There was supposedly a terrorist attack. They're blaming ISIS. And yet Russia is saying, no, it wasn't ISIS at all. Now they're finding that it could have been CIA or, you know, that the United States and Ukraine might have been behind it. Any of those things are possible. Now, there's a guy named Johnny. What is the guy's name? Johnny something. He does a lot of conspiracy theory. Well, not even conspiracy theory. I would call it more. He goes after, like, he's got this thing about corruption and all this other stuff. He goes after, you know, what's happening with. And again, I think it's the dog chasing the tail. What ends up happening with this kind of stuff is people come up with these ideas and they have these thoughts about different things. One of the things he goes through is 12 coups. I think he recently put out this video with 12 coups that happened. And of course, he has videos, you know, going more in depth in some of them. But he talks about all these coups that happened around the world, how the U.S. interfered and changed elections and put people in power and that kind of thing. And one of the things, and most of these countries he's talking about, I don't know that much about them. He talks about Libya, he talks about Gaddafi, he talks about all these people. I get it. I know there's a lot of interesting things behind the scenes story there. I know the Shah of Iran, all that kind of stuff, that our government was involved in a lot of this stuff. And a lot of it has to do with oil or bananas or something or some kind of commodity where big companies are involved. Now, one of the coups he talks about was Grenada and how we used this, the attack that these communists, there was a communist party came in, same people who were, you know, with Che Guevara and all these others, they were just followers of them, came in at some point and they were going to take over the island of Grenada. Well, what they didn't tell you, what this guy doesn't have, he kind of fails. I've been to Grenada and I've talked to the people there. I've talked to the locals there. I've talked to the leaders there, descendants of the elders. The island basically was run by what you'd call the elders, which was, you know, the people who'd been there forever, and they're just the kind of like the chiefs of the tribe there. And these, but they were modernized. They had a, there was a medical school there that was actually owned by a U.S. college, basically, is what it was. It's based there in Grenada. Now, there are some advantages to having property in Grenada and doing business down there. There's, one of them is the taxes and the money and the those kinds of issues. And what, so that, you know, beyond that point, there's also a lot of other things that were going on there. But they had, and this happens all over the world, by the way. What happens is a lot of these politicians and big and people with lots of money, they cart their money out, you know, they have their money moved offshore. Well, it's very, very convenient if you have your money offshore. Let's say you put your money in Antigua or wherever you put it, and you want to go to, you want to send your kids to college. Well, you get all that money sitting there. If you bring it back into the States, you got to pay taxes on it to pay the college bill. So what you do is you put that money out somewhere else. Well, now if you can find a college that's somewhere else, you know, like in the islands, well, guess what? You can just take that money and pay for the college. No, it never has to hit the state, you know, the state line again. Well, what they do is they just say, well, let's just, you know, give enough money or do whatever, because they're saving so much money on taxes that if they put this school together down in Grenada, these kids can all go to school down there, get a accredited U.S. accredited degree. And what they've saved on taxes basically pays for the whole tuition. Just transfer their money over to the school over there without anything having been taxed here in the U.S. Brilliant idea. And most politicians, by the way, have offshore accounts. So this money that comes from other countries, they just put it in their offshore account. And it never gets counted. It never gets seen here in the U.S. They can file their taxes. They do all their stuff. And they look clean as a whistle. But they're not. Dirty as scum. So, this is what happens. And this is where we go. So, but I happen to know, I talked to some of the people who were involved in this whole thing in Grenada, natives who were there at the time that this happened. There's a small island just off of the, just if you go, I think it's west of the airport. Am I right? I think the airport's on the east side. I might be back. I might be upside down here with that. But it's, you go back towards the island from the airport. There's on the, I believe the north side, might be the south side. There's a small island out there. It's kind of uninhabited. It's just kind of a barren little island. It's, you can basically swim across the bay to this thing. And the people who came in to take over the country gathered up all of the leaders at that time, the elders, the leaders of the island, took them over to that little island, kept them over there. Well, what we didn't know, what wasn't known at first, was that they just assumed they'd been kidnapped and that these people were going to take them over, and they slaughtered them. They killed them all. Killed every one of them. And then they started taking over all of the institutions that were there. Grenada was not exactly a fortified, you know, military. And they were, of course, the one place that was there that was considered to be the most important one was this U.S. institution, this college. And the students, you know, basically hunkered down while the island was under attack, and they weren't sure what was happening there. So the U.S. sent the military in to eradicate these people. This guy called it a coup because we came in and did this and then helped them establish a new government. Well, they didn't have a government anymore. They everything was gone. They killed everybody. They had to help them with this process. Now, supposedly we went in there and put in a puppet leader. That's not what happened. In fact, when I was there, this was probably back in the 90s, late 90s, mid to late 90s. If you were American, they treated you like you were one of the people who rescued them. They were grateful for what we did there. But that's not the way it's being spun now. This is revisionist. And then I question everything else this guy was talking about, because I don't know the backstory on half the things that he was saying was a coup that we got involved in that was wrong, that we were just meddling and evil in what we were doing. This is how it starts, so that caused me to get a little bit suspicious about everything else the guy said. Now I know that I know for a fact there have been a lot of nefarious things done for very selfish reasons among many politicians. But we need to be very, very careful about this misinformation and disinformation, and we don't fly off with some kind of righteous indignation about something that happened, like the bombing of a tent in Gaza, or the airstrike on a hospital in Gaza. And then move on and act like, when we find out that it didn't happen or it didn't happen that way, that we just treat it like, oh, well, anyway, they're still evil. It's just, we have to be very careful with this. Because we can be so easily swayed by disinformation from the media. I guarantee you, the media is going to come out, they're going to talk about this, and then if they find out they were wrong, they won't say a thing about it. They'll put something, they'll bury something at 3 o'clock in the morning. They might put something out on page 5. We'd like to retract our statement we made about the bombing of a tent in Gaza. They move on to the next thing. Now, I'm not saying that it happened, that it was anybody else. Who knows who did this? That's my point. Who knows? Who really knows? One of the things that was in the Babylon Bee recently was Israel concedes to San Francisco in their recent vote to support the ceasefire in Gaza. It's just ridiculous. But unfortunately, a lot of the Babylon Bee stuff, you can't tell whether it's real news or not. They could be posting things that they post seem like they come true. But it is so ridiculous that people like Chicago recently went through the process of having a formal declaration. We voted today to formally condemn Israel and their, you know, whatever they're doing over there. I think they call it a genocide. Voting for a ceasefire. Okay. Well, good for you. This is like people gluing their hands to a street to try to stop oil from being. What are you doing? This is not how our process works. They want to just mob. The mob rule is becoming the norm of the day. And in fact, it has proven to work in some cases. John Roberts, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, has made decisions not to take cases based on mob riots. Well, we didn't have riots back in 2000, so we can't look at this. We have riots now. We can't live out of it. We can't look at this case because our decision might cause a riot. Who's doing the rioting? Are the rioters the ones? No, the one time. Now, there was another case. I think this was it might have been Ohio. Of local law enforcement catching. It's funny how they always catch them right before anything happens. They look like exactly the same people. Caught them in a U-Haul rental truck. The back of this U-Haul rental truck. They all had same masks on, same exact haircuts, same shoes. White supremacist group. the back of a U-Haul truck, highly armed. They pull them out and arrest them all. And the feds sweep in and collect them all. How's the trial going for those guys? This has happened like 3 or 4 times now. So it's usually 20 guys, about 15, 20 guys. They parade them all off, show them on all of them still wearing their masks, still wearing the little bandanas as they're arresting them. You don't do that. See, that's, you pull the masks off, guys. All wearing sunglasses and masks. Can't identify their faces. By the way, there are certain kinds of sunglasses you can't, you can wear that your facial recognition will not work. I don't know if you've noticed this with your phone. Go to unlock your phone if you're wearing a certain pair of sunglasses. My phone can't recognize my face. It won't unlock. Now, if you're wearing a mask and you got sunglasses on, I guarantee you, or you have a beard, the facial recognition is not going to work. By the way, they have cameras now that are so good that they actually have retinal scan ability from quite a distance. They can retina scan your eyes and see who you are. And again, a certain type of sunglasses, they cannot penetrate that. So, just saying. We have this issue with this stuff. And again, it's an attempt, in my opinion, to show that there's these white supremacists out there. We keep catching them. Well, so what are they going to do? I mean, what were they planning on doing? Where's the court cases on this stuff? Where are these guys that you just caught recently in the last year? They keep catching them, and they'll put it on the news real quick. But it's kind of a undertone story. They don't really put it out there real big. But we never find out anything more about it. Who are these people? Where'd they go? Where's the court case? There are no court cases. These guys are feds. That's what the problem is here. This is all a ruse. It's all theater. It's all fake. It's always the same guys. Same organization. Why don't they just go after the organization? Hey, Christopher Ray. Well, there's Mark. We'll see what happens with all that. I don't know. Folks, tomorrow, I will be in Newark for the show tomorrow morning. Newark, New Jersey, that is. Pretty thrilled about that. Not so much. I get in there pretty late tonight, but I'll be there all day tomorrow, and then, like I said, the next morning I should be in Cleveland. At least that's where I should be. We'll see how that works out. Cleveland. It's a step. I'd say it's a sidestep from Newark. Maybe, I don't know. Especially the place I stay in Newark. There's places in Newark that aren't that bad, but it's where I stay is just terrible. We got to get this changed, because it's pathetic. But we'll see how it goes. God bless, folks. Have a happy rest of your week. God bless.